Hello, and welcome to episode two of the Happy Parent Podcast. And this time I want to talk about being a working parent. And there's a couple of reasons. One is I think it's really important because in this day and age, most of us will be working parents at some point in our children's lives. And even if you are in a position where you're able, or you need to stay home with your children, there's a very good chance that your partner is working then. And I think it can be really helpful if you are working to maybe think about some things that might take the strain off and ease things. And if you aren't the one who's working, just to have a little bit of a mindset about what your partner might be going through as a working parent. And also, and this is probably even more important, is that I think being a working parent, we talk a lot about work-life balance and we talk a lot about the strain of being a working parent, but it isn't all misery and it can actually be really fulfilling, as well as really difficult to manage. It can be really fulfilling. And so hopefully we'll explore some of the practical ideas that might ease the strain and the pinch points, but also give us a chance to celebrate the fact that we get kind of the best of both worlds and that we can work outside the home and use our skills and develop as business people or as employees, as well as the fulfillment of being a parent. Hopefully it'll be really practical. There'll be some like really practical stuff and maybe and I welcome any ideas or questions that anybody has as well that you'd like to explore for working parents in a future episode. So my first tip is identify what's important and attend to that. So this works both at home and at work. So at work, identifying what's important and attending to that. Everybody, like every employee, will at some point face time crunch and being kind of expected to deliver more than they feel they have time to do. So I'm not going to get into a lot of the main time management things. So obviously there are all the time management courses and tricks and things that you can do to make the most of your time. But a couple of things that particularly as a parent I found very helpful, because I guess just to backtrack a little bit, being a working parent, I did find that I didn't have the quote unquote luxury of staying late to meet a deadline because I actually had to get out the door at a very specific time in order to make the train, in order to get home, in order to get my kid from nursery on time. And I remember going back to work with my first child and actually the nursery saying like if you're late, they fine you, and if you're more than 30 minutes late, they call social services. And so feeling like it's really important for me to get home on time, which was different than obviously I wanted to leave on time and I wanted to get home on time before I had kids. But the worst case scenario was that we would order a takeaway and I'd be leaving my husband waiting and we wouldn't have dinner that I'd planned or something and it would eat into our night. But the need to manage your time at work and leave on time is that much more crucial when you've got a whole little person who's depending on you coming to pick them up on time. And I don't think before I had kids that I fully appreciated how that pressure felt. So being able to manage your work, but during your working, your contracted working hours is so critical as a working parent. So some of the things that I found particularly helpful is being really clear about your priorities for you and with your boss, your manager as well, if you can, if you have the type of manager that you can approach and have like a really open conversation with. I have found that repeatedly over the course of my time as a working parent has been really helpful just to be able to really clarify exactly what they need from me, and what are the priorities, like, so what are the things that I need to have done in order for them to be pleased with my performance and in order for me to be able to shut down on time without a real nagging sense of dread. Like, what will I need to have done today in order to at 4:30 or 5 o'clock or whenever it is that I need to leave, that I can kind of shut down, log off for the day and feel pretty good about myself. And then what are the things that absolutely, like, I will not be able to shut down and not log back in from home if I don't do this. So being really clear about what are the must-have dones and what are the nice-to-haves. And once you've identified that, you'll be able to eat the frog. So you may have come across the expression of eating the frog. Basically, the idea is the most important thing in your day, do that first. And I actually, the first time I heard this, I thought it was do the kind of most unpleasant thing, get the most unpleasant thing out of the way. But actually, that's not quite right. Because, you know, getting the most unpleasant thing out of the way at first kind of means that you're starting your day off doing something that you don't particularly enjoy, which can be helpful sometimes. But really, if you focus more on what is the most important thing that needs to be done. So again, going back to the priorities, what's the thing that you absolutely have to have done by the end of the day that you will be able to actually shut down and not have to log back in from home? So what's absolutely critical? And I actually came across this idea when I was working with a coach at work, and he recommended that when I first logged in, before I even checked my emails, that I ate the frog. So I tried it the first day, and the frog on that day for me was I had to do my budget reforecast, and it had a very firm deadline from the finance team, so I knew that it had to be done. I knew that it needed a little bit of headspace, a little bit of time dedicated to it, not massive amounts, but I needed to dedicate like a good hour to it, basically. And I had struggled to find that hour to be able to do that in the weeks preceding. And I'm not going to lie, the first time I did it, so I had to basically come in, log into my computer, and I didn't even open my Outlook, which is unheard of for me. And I did feel this kind of like initial sense of unease, like, oh my God, what emails have come in since I left yesterday that I'm not responding to. I kind of knew what was in my diary, so I knew when my next meeting was, and it wasn't for a couple hours. But other than that, I had no idea what had come in. And actually, like, once you get over that first hurdle of uneasiness about not knowing what's happened with your email, actually, it's nothing usually is so important that it'll come in overnight that can't wait an hour. And so, well, even though I was uncomfortable having not checked my email, not knowing even what was in my inbox, but just not even bothering opening it, just going straight into what I needed to do and eating the frog, I was able to knock it out really quickly, actually faster than I expected, which never happens. It's always, things always take longer than I expect them to. But I was actually able to finish it faster because I was just able to focus and just get it done. And then it meant that I didn't have it hanging over me the rest of the day. So when I did go into my inbox, A, there was nothing that major that couldn't have waited the hour. And B, I was then able to tackle my inbox knowing that I'd got one of my like biggest things on my to-do list done for the day, which felt really, really good. And that's the other thing that's nice about eating the frog first, and particularly like doing the most important thing rather than the most unpleasant thing, as I was saying earlier, is that you have this momentum that you take with you into the rest of your day because you've done something. I've tackled something. And some days, I think we've all had those days where you're treading through treacle and it just feels like one step forward, two steps back. You're working hard, you're working nonstop, but you're not actually able to like complete anything. And that can be really demoralizing or demotivating after a while. And this definitely sent me into my day with a really good, really good attitude, really good energy, and really excited about the rest of the day and able to actually get more done over the course of the day. So eating the frog. So that's basically the kind of the gist of attending to what needs attending to at work. And actually, just on that note, actually, there's one more thing, and that's to being really cutthroat about what doesn't need my attention. And that includes things like meetings. So for me, there were two things that, these might be relatively controversial, but there were two things that for me, I had to be really cutthroat about. One was meetings. So if somebody sent me a meeting invite, I really had to challenge, am I the best person? Like, what do you need me to be there for? What's my role in this meeting? Am I the best person to fulfill that role? And is a meeting actually the best use of time, the best way to go about getting the objective? Is this something that warrants an hour-long meeting, or can it be a five-minute conversation informally? And being a bit more, some meetings are just for information, and actually, and I even remember when I went back from maternity leave after my first son, having a conversation with my manager saying, look, if you put something that's just FYI, it's going to the bottom of the pile, and I'll get to it when I can get to it, but that may be a long time. I need to know if it's for my information as a courtesy, or is it for my information because I really need to know it, or is it for me to action? And being really clear about that, because the thing is, there is benefit in knowing what your colleagues are doing and knowing what's going on in the organization, and I don't want to belittle that or undermine that. But there's also a little bit of a tendency to broadcast information or to try and share information as if that's collaboration, and just sharing information isn't collaboration. And me just trying to go to meetings to be talked at for an hour with things that there's nothing I can action, there's nothing I can do with that information except know it. I've had to be very challenging about whether that's absolutely the best use of my time. Because, and if you think about it, I remember reading this in the book, it's called Rework, and it's a free download, and it was written by the guys who founded Basecamp, the project management software. And they said, if you think about a meeting in terms of productivity hours, sorry, you can probably hear my little one in the background playing. If you think about a meeting in terms of productivity hours, so if you think an hour-long meeting with three people, well, that's 3 hours of productivity. Is that the best use of time? So how many people are in the meeting and how long is the meeting? And very often you get a bit of tokenism. So a bit of, oh, well, we want to seem like we're collaborating, so we're going to invite everybody from every team. Or a bit of, we're going to cover ourselves so that if people have a problem with a project or a thing, a campaign that we're launching or something, well, we can say, but everybody was in the room at the beginning. Everybody had a chance to say something. Which sounds really unfair. I don't think that's always necessarily what happens. And also just that people don't want anybody to feel left out. So people don't want to turn around at the end of a project and think, oh God, we should have involved so-and-so. That would have been really helpful. They could have helped us with troubleshooting this problem, and they would have been able to have helped us avoid this cock-up. So there's, but at the same time, just for information, I've had to be really critical, challenging about, am I going to add value being in that meeting? Is it something that I can just read about in a one line, like in a one paragraph email? Or is it something that does need me to sit in a room for an hour? And if I'm only needed for 15 minutes of that hour, then why don't I come in for that 15 minutes and not stay for the other 45 minutes if it's not necessary? And so I did find that backing down, cutting down on my meetings, and cutting down on, there are other things that were just like, again, anything that was kind of for information that I had to be very challenging of. So one is that in my organization, we have an intranet, and that's again a place where people can post about what's going on in their areas of work. And I think there's an element of keeping a finger on the pulse and knowing what's happening, but again, I could easily spend an hour a day just catching up on what people are posting on different notice boards and blogs and this and that. And a lot of times it's one of those things that you don't know until you've invested 30 minutes in reading all the blogs. You don't know that there wasn't anything for you to do with that information. So again, that's something that's somewhat unpopular, but I kind of have to speed read, get the headlines, and then decide if there's anything that I need to do a bit of a deeper dive into, but being very, very quick and cutthroat about it, and investing my time elsewhere where I think it's going to make the biggest difference. And it's just like the Pareto principle, you know, that 80% of your impact is going to come from 20% of your work. So just knowing what that 20% is and really being able to prioritize that 20% is super helpful. And that all, again, is just aimed at, for me, being able to log off at the end of the day and think, I've done my bit. I've done my bit today. And it doesn't have to be fixing everything 100%. Every day doesn't have to be a standout stellar day where you move things a million miles forward. There's a real value in little and often. And that kind of segues nicely into talking about, well, what matters, you know, identify what matters and attend to that at home as well. So from a really practical standpoint, I'll give you a really practical example of what matters at home to me. So I like to have home-cooked meals. We're vegetarian, so, and we also try and watch what we eat, like watch our calorie intake, at least my husband and me. And obviously I like to have lots of vegetables. So for me though, what I have found is that, so having a home-cooked meal is really important. But having it be 100% from scratch is not, is that's negotiable. So I have a lot of recipes where I cut corners, and I might be able to share some of these recipes on the blog. But for instance, I have like a stuffed peppers recipe that instead of using the original recipe called for like fresh tomatoes, spices, and I think it actually called for minced beef. But I have like the pouch of Spanish style rice and a jar of salsa, and I use that with the to kind of cut some of the corners, so it's really easy. Basically, all of my meals, I can walk in the door from like starting to get ingredients out of the cupboard to plating it and having it on the table are pretty much most of my recipes are 30 minutes or less. So I don't do long prep time and long oven time. I just find that in the evenings we don't have time for that. So that's an example of where I guess like what matters to me is having the home cooked meal. What doesn't matter to me is if it's 100% from scratch. So finding out what does have, like, I would love 100% of our food to be completely from scratch, but that's just not going to be possible for me. So finding out like, well, what does matter to you and what can you flex on? So that's like a really practical thing, like meal preparation. But another example can be around bedtime routines and how you spend time with your children. So in our house, we, for instance, have prioritized bedtime stories. And bedtime stories play a really important part in my son's bedtime routine to get to sleep. And so we do two stories every night, and we've done two stories every night, gosh, for a couple of years now. And that's something that has to happen, that we make time for, that happens every night. However, bath time is not a crucial part of our bedtime routine, and we basically have my son has a bath every other night instead of every night. It might be different for you, it might be different for other people. I know some people, bath time is that ritual that helps the child get to sleep, and that's brilliant. More power to you. So finding out what really matters. And again, as with the work time thing, not every day has to be a knock it out of the park. So there's also something to be said for what you do regularly, but not necessarily doesn't have to be every day. And what can also make a big difference that we, I think, tend to undervalue is that little and often. So it doesn't always have to be. So, you know, I was saying, like, well, we always do two bedtime stories every single night because that's just a crucial part of our routine. But let's say that you find that bedtime stories isn't the crucial part of your routine. There can be ways, though, of doing little things together. So maybe you do a bedtime story, just one story every couple of days, or maybe you can't, you know. So since having a baby, I struggle now to do the bedtime story. So my husband really has taken over bedtime stories with my son. So what I do, though, is sometimes while I'm busy with the baby, and often I'm nursing the baby and kind of getting him off to sleep around the time that my son would be going to bed. So sometimes what we end up doing is actually watching CBeebies bedtime stories and watching it together. So it's not the same thing. It's, again, it's kind of like cutting a corner. It's not the same thing, but it's something. It's something that we can do that takes 5 minutes. So it doesn't have to be a big bonding thing and a big kind of cuddling up and getting two stories and doing the voices and everything that I would like to do. But it's something that we can do, and it's that little and often, the fact that we can do it pretty much every day, where I can find time to watch a 5 minute bedtime story with him on telly. And just things like eating meals together or sitting together while the kid has a snack after school, if you can, like 5 minutes here or 15 minutes there. I was really surprised that when I was measuring my time, which is going to be a blog about that, but when I was like, I was tracking my time and how I spend my time, and I was surprised how much value my 4-year-old son got from a 15-minute game of memory. You know, you turn all the cards over and you try and find pairs. So it doesn't have to be a lot for the kids to be happy and to feel like they're getting something. And it's probably better to have 15 minutes of playtime together where you're actually really playing with your kid. 15 minutes every day matters a lot, and it's easy to forget about that and only remember when you're able to do a couple of hours of playing together. But even I found 15 minutes of just popping into the garden and kicking a ball back and forth with my son while dinner's in the oven can make a huge difference, and he feels like he's had an evening with me. So again, just finding out what's important, attending to that at home and what matters to you and your kids, and then not sweating all the other stuff. So that's the second tip. The third kind of theme, I guess, of making working as a working parent work is identifying what your crunch points are and then trying to come up with strategies to address those specific crunch points. So the coach and writer Jennifer Loudon, who I'm a big fan of, she often talks about mini transitions. And so these are often the transitions in your day, those points in your day where you go from being with people to being home, being alone, being or kind of being out in the world to being kind of in your own space. And these can often be the times where it's a little bit jarring or a little bit awkward. So going from waking, from sleeping to waking, waking to sleeping, going from being at home to into the world, from being in the world to coming home in the door. And what identifying what your crunch points are, and you can come up with a strategy for that. So my crunch points, as an example, have frequently been leaving the house, getting out the door basically in the morning, because it feels like there's just 101 things to do. And it feels like a lot of it ends up being kind of shoehorned into a very small amount of time. And it can be a bit fraught trying to get out the door, especially with little ones. So the thing is, I'm actually, some people are a lark where they get up in the morning and they're wide awake in the morning and that's a good time of day for them. And other people are night owls. They're a bit slower moving in the morning, but they can stay up late and they're really sharp in the evening. So I'm a lark. I wake up, and as soon as I wake up, I'm wide awake and I can get up moving. Even being a lark and getting up early, I still find that the mornings can sometimes be difficult because it feels like by the time my son gets up, there doesn't feel like there's loads of time between him getting up and us having to walk out the door. And again, it just feels like there's a lot to do in that little window of time. So my strategy for the mornings has been that anything I can do the night before, I go ahead and do. So for instance, I sometimes will actually take my bath or shower in the evening so that I don't have to try and juggle taking care of a baby at the same time as like trying to have a bath and get ready myself and get everybody else ready. I try and make sure that I've got my boys' clothes downstairs so that as soon as they're up, we can go ahead and like brush teeth and get into clothes and get everybody dressed. And it means if my husband is still sleeping upstairs, that we don't bother anybody trying to go in and get clothes. So I get my clothes downstairs as well so that I can, when the opportunity arises in the morning, I can quickly throw on my day clothes. And I use the morning time to make everybody's lunches to take to work and school, and to make breakfast and coffee and all that stuff. And it's just become a bit of a ritual, and I kind of wake up and immediately, like, there's just a few things. If you can, with these mini transitions, if you can kind of create almost like a sequence of events, so there's one trigger, and then that initial thing kind of sets off a kind of series of events and things that you do, and then it just becomes automatic and you don't have to really think about it. So for me, it's like as soon as I wake up, I change the baby's nappy, I kind of get the baby situated in front of the telly, maybe with something like Sesame Street or something, which sounds awful, but he likes the bright colors and it keeps him a bit quiet so that I can brush my teeth and get myself dressed and start making the lunches. I have my glass of lemon water, so I squeeze half a lemon in a pint of water, and I drink that while I'm making lunches, and then I can make the coffee, and then I can make my breakfast. And so by the time that I'm done with all of that, the baby's usually getting sick of sitting on his own and watching TV or playing with his toys, so I can get the baby out of his chair and sit with him. Quite often by that point, the 4-year-old has come downstairs and is awake. So I can also then make him his breakfast and go ahead and get him situated. So he's eating breakfast. I've got my breakfast and my coffee and my lemon water, and I can sit down, and then I can sit down and watch the news and relax. But that also means that then basically I'm ready to go. Baby is likely ready to go. Everything that needs to be made is done and dusted. And all I have to do at that point then is, once my son's had his breakfast, his brush his teeth, and get his school clothes on him, and then we're ready to walk out the door. So again, that might be different for you, because if you are more of an owl, it might be that actually making lunches or prepping the coffee maker needs to happen in the evening, and so that your morning ritual, there's a lot less that you have to do. But whatever it can be, like the first thing you do, and then that triggers the next thing that you do, and the next thing, and it just becomes really automatic, can just take that decision making and that, I think that anxiety about what am I forgetting to do, or what do I need to do next, or what am I forgetting to do before it's too late, and like I need to leave the house, and then I realize I haven't made my son's lunch or whatever it is. So obviously I'm just sharing my examples, but everybody's will be a little bit different, because everybody's crunch points are a little bit different, everybody's routines are a little bit different, and which transitions are difficult for you and your family, and what exactly you need to do is going to be different. The other point that I have found sometimes difficult has been, especially since I've been on maternity leave, is I've found that getting in the door from the afternoon school pickup, when we walk in the door, and especially when my youngest son was a newborn, so we'd walk in the door, my 4-year-old would be kind of wanting my attention, and the newborn would, that would be his fussy period. And so I found, when he was newborn, that the period of kind of walking in the door at say 3:30 or 4 until about 7 was really, really difficult. So again, just like with the morning, where there's a ritual and there's like a this triggers that, triggers that, we do A, then we do B, then we do C. I came up, working with my 4-year-old, we kind of developed a bit of a ritual for walking in the door. And it just takes that guesswork out of, as soon as we walk in the door, thinking, now what? So now the ritual for us is, we walk in the door, my son takes off his own shoes and puts his shoes in the shoe cabinet. I put his school bag away, I put his lunch, any of the Tupperware that his lunch stuff was in, I put that in the sink so that I can do that when I do the washing up, and I put his lunch bag away. I get my son a snack so that he can sit at the table then, still in his school uniform, he has a snack, and while he's eating his snack, I go upstairs, I get his day clothes, is like home clothes, and we change out of school uniform and get him into his own clothes. All of that, and I usually, while I'm doing that, the baby is still kind of in the carrier, or possibly like on a play mat on the floor playing with some toys, depending on how old he's been and what his mood has been like. It's varied since, in 6 months since we've worked this out. But that just means that as soon as we walk in the door, I'm not being pestered. My son knows that I'm going to get him a snack. We might even talk about what he wants for a snack on the way home, so that I know exactly what I'm going to get for him. And it just means that it buys me about 10 minutes as we walk in the door, just to kind of get in the door and get situated. And it doesn't sound like much, but for some reason, that first 10 minutes, I then feel like by the time I've taken the baby out of the carrier and kind of had a chance to sit down, my son is a little bit less like, can I get this? Can I have that? Can I have this? And it just calms things down, so that by the time that 10-minute sequence of tiny things is over, that we, I'm then in a better headspace to be able to say, okay, now what games do you want to play? Do you want to watch a movie? Do you want to go outside and play with the football? I'm in a better space to be able to offer up options to him, and a little bit less stressed out and frayed myself. And now, of course, my newborn as well, is he's outgrown that kind of really fussy period, that kind of witching hour, which makes it a lot easier. So having a look at those types of transitions. Another one, when I've been working, has been kind of how to segue from being at work to being at home. So, and often it came down to using that commute as my transition from work mode to home mode. So maybe it's if you're having a really good podcast lined up, a good book, or often I would just do a meditation on the train ride home, and that would just help me reset. And if I needed to almost like debrief the day at work, maybe doing a meditation that was a bit more reflective or a bit more about looking back at the day at work and closing anything, dealing with any regret that I have about how I handle something at work, so that I could basically put a pin in it. It's over, it's done. Close it off, so that by the time I walked into the nursery to pick up my son from nursery, I had dealt with the day's events at the office. Similarly, leaving that last half hour before you have to leave, whatever time you leave the office, if you can leave that last half hour free of meetings, easier said than done sometimes. But I found, for instance, that helped me, that I had a last half hour to kind of wrap up any little emails or things, maybe even prep myself, like prep my to-do list for the following day, so that I could just, when I did actually log off, I could mentally log off from work as well, as much as possible. And so that's, I mean, that those are basically my practice, like what I have found as a working parent have worked for me. And I hope that maybe sharing some of that has maybe given you a little bit of an idea about either where your crunch points are and what strategies you can find to get around them, or how you can organize your workload or your home workload in a way that will make it easier during the week for you. So, and I think as well, the last point I'd like to leave on is that I think it's very easy to feel guilty, especially when you're working and you think that you've brought these people into the world, and wondering if you're doing them justice when you're spending so much of your time away from them. And there's always that challenge of how much of, you know, the big chunk, the big percentage of your earnings that you're spending to pay somebody else to watch the children that you desperately wanted to bring into this world. And it can feel at odds, or that feeling that how you spend your time should reflect what's important to you. And what does that say if in the course of Monday to Friday, if the majority of your waking hours you're not with your kids, does that in any way reflect how you feel about your kids or how you prioritize your kids compared to your work? And I just want to say that there's a lot of us feel that way at times, but it's absolutely not something we should feel guilty about. And one thing I would say is that we're setting an example when we're working parents. We are showing our kids, we're teaching them the importance of a work ethic, of showing up when you say you're going to show up, of going into work on a Monday when you don't feel like going into work, the value of money, the value of work to get what you need to provide for your family, to provide for yourself, to make a difference in the world, whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's a product that your company is offering or whether it's a nonprofit and the work that you're doing. There's a beauty and there's a value to this. You know, if you're training as a healthcare professional and it's taking you away from your family, but actually showing what that retraining, like showing what that following your passions and what matters to you and putting in the effort and the grit to do a job that you care about. These are all really valuable lessons to instill in our children. So, and I would also say that as I'm kind of wearing the staying at home hat at the moment, being on maternity leave, that also has its strains and that also has its sources of guilt. And so there's no perfect answer, I think, when it comes to being a working parent, whether you're working in the home or working outside of the home. They all have their ups and downs, and it's all difficult in different ways. And I think it's easy to feel guilty for different things. So no matter what, it kind of, the grass is always greener. So it does have its strains being a working parent, but I hope that you can also find that you agree that there is some value to be having something to enjoy being a working parent, and hopefully some of these things that we've talked about will give you some ideas to make that just that little bit easier. If you have any thoughts on the podcast, any thoughts about being a working parent, any questions, any tips that you'd like to share, please get in touch. All the contact details on the, you can either message me on the Facebook page or contact me with the contact details on happyparent.org.uk. And I hope to see you soon.